You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have Elizabeth Kay on the show with me today. She has a fantastic new debut novel. It's called Seven Lies, and today, when we're recording this, is release day. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right. Yes, it's out today in the U.S.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let me tell you what, Elizabeth, this book... I love a good thriller. I love a good mystery. I write mostly science fiction, but I love to weave some mystery and some thriller elements into there. And I'll tell you what, I could not put this book down. It twists and turns all over the place. I just about dropped it all over the place. It's
Thank
so good.
Yeah. That's what I want to hear. I want a book that people can't put down. That's definitely the goal.
Exactly. Well, before we get to talking about the book and you and all the great stuff we're going to talk about, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
So I won a short story writing competition when I was about 8 years old. So I think I'd been writing for quite a while by then. It was a book called, I had written a short story called Prince Useless, which was kind of what happened after Cinderella. And the competition was judged by Jacqueline Wilson. I don't know if she's as big in the US as she is in the UK,
now,
but she is.
I know the name.
She's written so many kids, but she was writing when I was a child. She's still writing now. And she was the judge. And I got to meet her as part of the prize. And that was just one of the most incredible moments. It was being 8 years old and meeting your absolute hero. So that was the first moment where I thought, this is really exciting. This is such good fun. Look, I've written something and look what's happened as a result. So I think that's the first moment for me that writing felt really, really exciting.
Right. Were you a bookish kid? Did you read a lot at that point?
Oh yeah, me and my best friend at our primary school library, we read everything that was in there. They had to keep ordering more books because we were just unstoppable.
So you're the blame.
Yes.
Do you remember, Elizabeth, the first book or series or author that you read that just completely transformed you, that made you realize that stories could take you to another place?
I was actually, this is curious, I hadn't thought about this before, but it's another book that is linked to Cinderella. It's called Ella Enchanted. They actually made a film of it
Yes.
a while ago. And I remember reading that and just being so cross. I was so frustrated and so angry with this book and with the characters. It's about a woman who has to be obedient all the time. And I remember it feeling just the most extreme frustration on her part. And I think it was one of the first times that a book had moved me in such a way, and I had responded in such an emotional sense. And I think it was then that I thought, you know, God, these can be so powerful, can't they? A book can change you. It can make you think. It can really make you feel. And, you know, that's a lovely thing to discover as a child.
You know, we often think of good responses to books as the response that will bring out audience engagement, or, you know, that we'll connect with someone. But sometimes it's a negative emotion that comes out of that. And in certain situations, that's just as important, if not more so, than someone who said, oh, I really enjoyed that book. Because there are probably lots of books that you really enjoyed that you don't bring up in conversation. But this one kind of stuck with you. It hit a nerve, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it kind of comes to me as well. I've read a lot recently about unlikable narrators, and lots of readers aren't so keen on narrators who they aren't fond of. For me, they're my absolute favourite. I love a narrator who makes me feel unsettled or makes me question things, or someone who for me, liking a narrator is great, but feeling challenged by them in some way is more exciting.
Right, right. And I think Gone Girl did that for a lot of people, especially in popular fiction, this idea that there could be a main character, a narrator that we didn't trust and that makes us doubt, you know, what we think of people and how we judge people. That was expertly done. And I think we've all been trying to hit that high watermark since then.
Absolutely. Gone Girl was actually the first thriller I'd ever read. I never really thought of myself as a crime or a thriller reader. And I think I bought Gone Girl at an airport going on holiday. And I wasn't, you know, because I didn't read in that genre, I wasn't expecting twists or turns. That it just wasn't something I was familiar with. So when I hit that point in the story, I was just completely floored. I was like, I've got to go back to the beginning. What's happening? This makes no sense. This is incredible. And since then, I've been unstoppable as a thriller reader.
I think I was listening to the audiobook when I first read it, and I backed it up like 5 minutes. I was like, surely I missed something. Did I just skip over something? What happened here? And then it hit me like, oh my gosh, really? You can do that? That was just broke my brain open, I think.
So just totally played with your expectations. You thought you knew where you were going, and all of a sudden, none of it. You were totally wrong. You had to rethink everything you'd already read or listened to. I just think, you know, what a smart, smart book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Elizabeth, you knew that you wanted to work with books, to write stories. As you matured and grew, what did that look like to you? Because a lot of us have these ideas and these dreams, but, you know, life gets in the way and we have to pay bills and, you know, this kind of stuff. So we take jobs and we work with and still have this dream that's kind of in the back of our mind. What did that look like for you?
I wrote a lot as a child. And then when I was a teenager, when I went to university, I didn't really write at all. I was studying English, but I was doing a lot of reading of kind of critical texts, writing essays. It wasn't creative at all. And I left university and I first went into a job that I really hated in the travel industry. And I was really miserable. And my then boyfriend, now husband, was saying to me, well, you really like reading. Why don't you look for something in that space instead? You know, if this is making you so unhappy. And I applied for lots of jobs in publishing. And I started off as a personal assistant to a senior editor. And I just fell in love with it. I felt like I'd found my place. I loved that I was being paid to look at manuscripts and to think about authors and to take care of people's work and their words. And I think it was that reignited my passion for writing and made me want to write creatively again. I think I'm just really fortunate in a sense to have found kind of, I've got two jobs that I really love, which I think is almost unheard of. I think once I'd found myself in that publishing space, I knew I wanted to be on both sides. And I started writing again, and it took me a long time to be writing something that I felt excited by. I tried lots and lots of different books and styles too before Seven Lies. But once I'd settled on Jane, I thought, actually, this feels promising to me. I feel like this is something I could imagine getting excited by as an editor.
World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too.
When working in editing and publishing, did that change the notions that you had about the publishing industry and about how books are created and made? Did kind of seeing how the sausage is made, did that change your attitudes about writing and telling your stories?
I think writing a story is one thing. Encouraging people to read a story is a totally different thing. And I was amazed in my first few months at the number of people who work on any given book. From, you know, we think about an editor and maybe a publicist and the cover designer. But my goodness, the team is so much bigger than that. People selling rights and doing contracts and doing marketing campaigns, digital marketing, print, you know, the kind of the whole team supporting a publication is huge and vast. And kind of the talent that sits within all those different spaces is incredible. So to be published and to have that behind your book is a real thrill.
You said that that there were books that you worked on before the current book, before Seven Lies. Did I read somewhere that you had worked for nearly 3 years on a book that just never would come together?
Yeah, I was.
That's so frustrating.
I started writing it. Oh, it was driving me mad. And I thought that everyone says to be a writer, you have to persevere. And I had interpreted that as persevere on the project that you're working on. So I was really tough on myself. And I kept thinking, no, do not give up. You know, you've got a full length thing here. It's taken you along. And the more time I put in, the harder it was to let go. And I would change perspective. I would change the tense. I would add a new character. I would take someone away. And I felt like stopping writing that book would be a failure, which I think is why I didn't do it for so long. It took quite a long time for me to kind of give myself permission to try something else and to put that one in the bottom drawer.
You know, that's a very important thing that that I think we don't lend enough credence to, is this idea that just because you have an idea that seems to be a great idea, it seems to be inspired, but it just never will go anywhere. You know, instead of pushing that rock uphill, maybe it's time to find another rock.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, I hope that I became a better writer in the process. Certainly, I knew what weaknesses there were in that manuscript, and I sought to address them from the very beginning with Seven Lies. I hope successfully. So I know that Seven Lies wouldn't exist were it not for that book. But gosh, I wish I'd given up a year or two earlier.
Was there anything about that book that was salvageable? You know, sometimes you have a book that just doesn't work, but, you know, maybe there's a character in there that really would work somewhere else and really, or maybe a plot device or something. Were you able to salvage anything from that book?
I would say there's probably less than a page of that book. I think I've pulled a few paragraphs out and into Seven Lies, but as I say, no more than a page. It's very much a bottom drawer book, I think. Who knows? Maybe it'll come back to life for me one day. I'll find a way to make it work and feel excited about it again. But at the moment, I'm very frustrated by it still. It sits there as something that I feel like it was a bit of a waste of time, which is actually a negative way to be, really. But yeah, it's hard, isn't it, when you keep going at something that doesn't have promise. It was just such a frustrating experience, I think. And I'm a very impatient person, so I was getting more and more annoyed by it. So to start writing this, and I love the voice in Seven Lies from the beginning, the character of Jane I was intrigued by. So it was such a joy to be writing something that I wanted to be writing.
So I think this may be beneficial to a lot of people. So let's explore that for just a second. The book, when did you know that it was not going to go anywhere? And what was the process for you of letting that book go? Did you have another idea that would become Seven Lies that overwhelmed that idea? Or did you put this idea to bed first and then say, okay, I'm going to clear my mind, and then began Seven Lies?
The latter, certainly. I couldn't tell you when I knew that the one before wasn't working. I think I probably knew a long time before I stopped writing it. But me and my husband and I were in New York, and we went to see the musical Waitress on Broadway while we were there. And there's a song in that called Take It From an Old Man, in which one of the characters is telling the other, you know, you must go after your dreams. Life is short. You know, don't sit and wait for something to happen. And I think as I left the theatre, I just thought, God, that really speaks to me. That message really makes sense to me, that I should try something else. And I just drew a line there and then, haven't opened that manuscript since, other than to pull out a few paragraphs that I've known were there. And I started thinking, right, what do I want to write next? What can I do that feels better? What would be exciting?
That's so funny how an inspiration can come from the unlikeliest of places. I don't know anyone who would compare that play to your current book, but in, you know, for you, there's definitely a line of delineation that goes from that play to this book. It's so funny where inspiration comes from, and just giving yourself the permission to do something completely out of the box just opens all the doors. It's funny how that works.
Absolutely. I think that's, whenever people say, you know, what piece of advice would you give to writers? I want to say, give up all the time. Start something new. Just never be afraid to, we're told, persevere, keep persevering. And yes, I think that's really important. But I also think if it's not working, just open a new Word document, look at a blank page, write something else. You might write something different again tomorrow, or you might go back to the first one again, but don't get so stuck in one thing. I think that's, I hope it's an easy mistake to make. I'm sure I'm not the only one.
So when you began Seven Lies, what was that kernel of a story? I love to kind of go back to where a story begins for people. Was it a character? Was it, you know, a plot situation, a certain story device, or kind of what was that first inkling of a story?
I think for me, it was a few different things. I was really excited and really engaged by dark, sinister books at that time. I knew I wanted to write about female friendship. And then it was very much the character of Jane. I started writing from her point of view, and the first chapter is more or less unchanged from where I sat down with an empty document and just started writing. And once I knew that I had a sense of her and I was enjoying her and I was interested in what her life looked like, I sat down and thought, right, what mistakes did you make last time? Which for me was writing a book that I didn't feel had very much momentum or structure. And I thought, well, how are you going to give yourself some structure this time round? And Seven Lies was born from there. So I had Jane first, and the structure came a little bit later.
What were some of the themes that began to emerge? And were there themes in the beginning that you kind of wrote around, or was it one of these instances where you have a finished story or a nearly finished story, and you look back and go, oh, wow, these things keep emerging over and over, and it looks like I'm really kind of dealing with this topic as the story unfolds?
I think I started with the character of Jane in the moment that the novel begins. And I think after I'd written a little bit from her perspective, I paused and I thought, how have you become this person? And that, I think, is when I started to recognize themes that I probably inadvertently put in. So Jane has experienced a great deal of loss in her life, and I am fascinated by death. I'm really interested in grief as a concept. I've experienced some grief myself, and I felt kind of how heavy you can feel under the weight of loss. And I was intrigued by what it might look like were someone to experience loss after loss after loss, which is what Jane goes through. And so I think those themes began to emerge once I started to interrogate who she was. And conveniently, some parts of my brain must have been working to make it happen. The things that seemed to make her were things that interested me, as a, you know, a brilliant female friendship that had formed the foundation to her teenage years. She has lost people who are important to her, but she is also she's a balance, I think, a very stubborn and strong-willed and difficult, but also quite vulnerable and troubled. And I was interested in how those would play together and what sort of character would emerge if I continued down that road.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan. You'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code HANK when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.org. In this book, there really wouldn't be a Jane without Marnie, her friend. Tell us a little bit about the relationship between these two friends, kind of the push and pull of their relationship.
So for me, I really wanted to write a female friendship that started from an incredibly positive place. And they've been friends since they were 11. They fit really well together. They at that point in their life, they were a perfect pair. Each had the thing that the other wanted. They spent all their time together. They were totally inseparable in the way that I think teenage girls can be with a best friend. And as they grow up, they grow at a slightly different speed in terms of getting jobs and getting married and finding boyfriends and so on. And so these slight gaps open up in their friendship. And I think there's a question in how childhood friendships evolve. Do you need to stay the same, both of you, in order for that friendship to survive? Or do you need to evolve at the same rate in order for it to survive? And what happens if you are moving in at slightly different speeds or to slightly different places, which is what happens with Jane and Marnie in this book?
One of the themes that comes up over and over in the book is this idea of truth and subsequently lies. Do you feel like that the truth should always be told? Are there instances where we should tell little white lies so we don't hurt one another? How important is this concept of truth?
I think I struggle to believe anybody who says they never lie. I think it's so built into how we operate and how we interact with other people. When someone says, "Do you like my new haircut?" I just can't imagine ever saying no. And I can't think of anyone who would. The question that you're being asked isn't really a question that requires an honest answer. It requires a yes, I like your haircut. It's kind of how we speak to one another. It doesn't always rely on truth. I think strong friendships inevitably do rely on truth. But those like passing conversations, I'm not sure it's so important.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write this book? Because the previous book, we know that you kind of wrestled with for 3 years and you know, eventually broke up with that idea of that book. But was the writing, did it feel different for this time out?
Oh, massively. I think it took me about 6 to 9 months to get a first draft that I was happy with, to kind of get a first draft and fiddle with it enough to want to send it. I think 6 months for the first draft, then I fiddled for 3 and sent it to agents. So it was a completely different experience. I think I knew that I had to keep going. Again, I think one of the problems with the book before is I let myself have time off here and there, and it would kind of go cold in my mind. This one I really stuck with and decided not to let go until it was done, which worked far better for me, it turns out, just in terms of staying engaged and staying excited by the concept.
You know, in a lot of writers, and I'm guilty of this, when the story really heats up and you know what's going to happen and you're writing toward that and you just can't get the words out fast enough. And, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and, you know, it stretches over kind of weeks where you feel like you're in this story and you're just writing every chance that you get. And then other people in your lives, in your life that are not enveloped and engrossed in the story, you know, kind of look at you like, where are you? You know, what's going on in your head? Especially this story has some really dark turns in it. Did you ever, you know, catch yourself kind of raising your head up and looking around and going, God, the world's really not this dark and this bad? Like, how do you distance yourself from the story that you're writing while the story is so hot and trying to come out?
I don't know, to be honest. I think I stayed quite embedded in it while I was writing it. For me, whenever I got stuck in the story, I would say to my husband, we need to go for a walk. Can we go for a walk? And we would go for a walk. And he hadn't read it, so he only read it very recently, actually. But he knew parts of it all the way, because I kept saying, if you were in this situation, what do you think someone would do? Or I need to get my character from here to here. How can that happen? And actually having a sounding board who didn't know the story as well as I did, who didn't know the characters as well as I did, was hugely helpful. Someone I could say, you know, think about how people operate. And someone who would say to me, someone would never do that. And I'd say, oh, but I need them to do that because the character needs to be here. And he'd be like, well, it doesn't matter because I just can't see that anyone would ever behave in that way. Someone who I suppose would call me out and tell me that what I was planning didn't make sense, or would kind of brainstorm with me, I guess, to find the best solution. I suppose having someone to talk to helped me keep a bigger picture.
Speaking of which, did you find that there were certain places or times of day where you were more inspired and that the words came out? You know, some writers hold their writing process very precious, and, you know, they need to be in a certain place with a certain flavored cup of coffee or tea. And you know, there needs to be no music, or there needs to be music. Are you that kind of writer, or can you just be anywhere and the words flow?
I definitely find I'm at my best first thing in the morning. I kind of like the time where I've woken up, but the day hasn't really started and I'm in a kind of limbo. I find that the best. But actually partway through writing this, ridiculously, a car drove into the front of my house and we had to move out for 10 weeks. So I had to become very flexible then about where I was going to write from. I couldn't kind of protect those few hours in the morning. It had to be in the car or where we were staying or in a hotel we'd been put up in. I'm glad I wasn't too protective of what I was doing initially, because I think I'd have struggled had I been that way.
For sure, for sure. So as someone who works in publishing for your day job, did you have a pretty good idea of what the process needed to be once you finished the manuscript and wanted to get the book out to the rest of the world? Do you feel like working and publishing gave you a leg up, not necessarily in getting it published, but in just knowing what the process was?
Oh, absolutely. I had a sense of what would happen next if things went the right way. I actually sent the novel out under a pseudonym because I was just really concerned that people wouldn't like it. And I had agents and editors who I knew from my professional life, and I didn't want to risk damaging those relationships or having them think, gosh, this is a terrible book. So I sent it out under a name that wasn't mine. So no one knew that I worked in the industry at that point. But I think knowing how the industry worked was hugely advantageous. I had a sense of, you know, what my publicist looked for if they were to go out and talk about it. You know, was it making sure my book would tick a box for a sales team trying to pitch it in somewhere? I think I can't play down how useful that must have been, probably in subconscious ways as well. I have no doubt that it was very helpful.
And the book kind of spawned a bidding war of sorts, didn't it? When the book kind of hit that stage where it was being purchased and picked up by publishers, it kind of went a little nuts, didn't it?
Oh, totally nuts. It was one of the kind of the maddest few weeks of my life, if I'm honest. It's the thing you dream of. It was the thing I dreamed of anyway. I'd seen it happen for other authors. I'd been involved in book auctions as an editor. I never really allowed myself to believe that that could possibly happen for my book. But did it exist as a small bubble of hope somewhere in my mind? Absolutely. I mean, it was a real thrill. I think it was so surreal, to be honest. I knew it was something I wanted and that I would dream about. The reality of it was totally different.
So awesome. So the book is now out everywhere in the States. Hardback, audio edition. It's available everywhere now. Seven Lies. We're going to put links to it in the show notes. Elizabeth, if people want to dig into all the great stuff that you do and find out more about the book and about you, where can they connect with you online?
Sure. So I am at Any Other Lizzie, Lizzie with a Y, on both Twitter and Instagram. I would love to hear if anyone reads the book and enjoys it or has any questions. That is where I will be.
Excellent. We'll put links to those in the show notes where people can find you easily. Elizabeth, I love the book. I love what you're doing, and we're going to send everyone to pick up their copy of the book. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, over-complicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today.